This is Build and Analyze, a weekly news and discussion show about the world of iPhone, iPad, iOS, mobile web development, and coffee. It's hosted by Marco Arment. He is the creator of Instapaper.com. And by me, I am Dan Benjamin. Hard to believe it, but today is December 5th already, 2011. Can you believe that?
No.
Episode number 54. We want to say thanks to our two sponsors, Smile Software and Squarespace. We also want to mention that bandwidth for this episode is provided by Stitcher Smart Radio. Hear all the shows from 5x5 and a bunch of other podcasts, which you don't want to hear, on demand and on the go with Stitcher's free mobile app. You go to stitcher.com/5. You download it today, and this, I guess they're giving away $100. Do you know anything about this? Anyway, stitcher.com/5. Get $100. Here's some stuff. How are you, Marco?
I found out the big stack of Twitter at replies was mostly because my aerator question earlier today.
You're getting a fish tank?
No, the little aerators on the end of faucets. The little like screw on cap with the little screen inside of it.
Sure.
And the purpose of this thing, if you ever used a faucet without an aerator, it's basically like a hose. Like the water like splatters all over the place. It doesn't form like a nice coherent stream. It's just like all over splattery and awful. And my tweet was that every single time I've moved into a new apartment, and including this house that we bought, every time I've moved, I've had to replace an aerator because at least one was missing. And these things, they cost like $2 at the hardware store. You almost never have to replace them. Why are they always missing in the places I move in? And like the faucet's pretty unusable without them, in my opinion. I was wondering why, and I'm just looking and I see now I have a giant, and after I tweeted that, I went to run some errands. So now I see my tremendous stack of at replies is mostly informing me from lots of people, including Lindsay Campbell. I haven't heard from her in a while. Huh. Remember the Mob Logic show?
Oh.
She was the host of that, and that one finance thing before that. Everybody is telling me that apparently like teenagers use these to make bongs out of, or pipes. Like they use the screens from the aerator. So I guess like it shows how little experience I have to any kind of like doing bad things culture, because I was such a nerd. It seems like wouldn't it be easier to like cut something out of a screen of a window? Like you get like 1,000 of them out of a window, whereas the faucet, you got to unscrew the thing. You got to, I don't know. It doesn't seem like it makes any sense. And then the faucet's unusable without that. And then every time I move in somewhere, I have to go to the hardware store and spend another $2 to try to get the right size, and then go back when I got the wrong size and return it for the right one. Anyway, we have some follow-up. First of all, I have to apologize, Dan. Do you know why?
No.
We went so far off topic in the last show. I have to do some follow-up about coffee, because we have all these questions about coffee. And the last show I spent entirely talking about development.
Right. There is no coffee at all discussed.
None. And so it's just... We got so much feedback from people saying, please stick to the coffee show. Split off the development into its own podcast or something.
Right, right.
You know, I don't come for the development talk. So I have some questions from some follow-up on this. So first off, a question from a few weeks ago from Chris Hayes. I've heard...
Also known as Purple Hayes.
Yes. Well, I think he made the first modem or something.
Is this one of the ones you want me to read or no?
No, those are separate.
Okay.
Those are for the later off-topic.
I got it. Okay. I'm ready.
I've heard some recent buzz about the AeroPress flip technique.
Ooh.
I've been using an AeroPress for a while, but have yet to try this, so I'd love to hear Marco's opinion on this. Now, you asked me about it too, Dan. Did you end up trying it ever?
I have not. I still have not tried the inverse or flip technique. Is it right. Inverse or flip, or are those two separate things?
I think it's the same thing.
Okay.
So to give the Dan Benjamin version, basically the AeroPress, this wonderful $20 coffee maker that it just basically, it's like a big syringe almost, like a big just plunger.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it basically just makes coffee from some brief submersion and then some light pressure. And the kind of like, oh, and Vince to go, I'll get to that in a second. The kind of coffee geek AeroPress power user segment insists that the best way to do this is actually, rather than resting on top of the mug and pouring the water in and letting it slowly drip out the filter while it's brewing before you push it down, if you turn the whole thing upside down, don't put it on the mug yet, it keeps all the water in the AeroPress, so nothing leaks out before it's like fully brewed.
Now, have you ever looked to see, Marco, how much is actually dripping out? I mean,
it's pretty usually it's about like half of one of the numbers on the side worth. Mm. So like if I pour it up to like 3, then it'll go down to like 2.5 before I plunge. So it isn't that much.
Okay.
Anyway, so I tried the inverse technique where like you have it separate and then you flip it on top of the cup at the last minute. I didn't drip any, which was I figured it'd be messy, but it wasn't. So I tried it a few times, but I don't do it anymore because I couldn't really tell any difference. And so that's it. And Vince Togo in the chat room asked if I've ever done any blind taste tests on various coffees and methods of brewing coffee. Actually, I have been planning to make a blog post about like all these different AeroPress technique variations. So like I have the little steel disc filter, which I've used twice and I hated it, and I'll tell you why later. But you know, like I have like, and so that I have all the different water factors you can vary, you know, duration, instructions, whether you stir or not. There's the World AeroPress Championships, and they publish their techniques. This is actually a thing. They publish their techniques, and you can try to replicate them at home. And I have actually wondered for a while, this would be a pretty cool blog post to arrange some kind of blind taste test. Ideally, I would be the one tasting it, though. So I would need some help. Like someone else would have to be preparing it,
and they'd have to be like really good.
Yeah. So who knows? I didn't really detect any difference from the inverted technique. And to answer the question,
you've just killed a thousand dreams, Marco.
I know. I mean, we'll see in a blind test. Who knows? To answer the question from Sean Wall in the chat room also, he said, you really need to go Chemex. And are you familiar with the Chemex, Dan?
I actually, when you first started talking about the AeroPress, I thought it was a Chemex. That's what I thought.
Well, it's almost the same, except completely different. So the Chemex is, you've probably seen it before, you being the public, not you, Dan. Of course, I know you know what it is, obviously. But, you know, that's fine for Dan. But for the public, the Chemex is that kind of hourglass-shaped glass coffee pot with the big wooden handle in the middle. You've probably seen it. I think it's in the MoMA. It's a beautiful coffee maker. I think it was made like in the 60s or so. And they still sell them, and it's great. I recently got my first Chemex. All this time, I'd never tried one, and I just got one a couple of weeks ago because I wanted a way. The AeroPress is great for making one or two cups. Well, it's great for making one. It's good for making two. Beyond that, it's pretty hard to make much with the AeroPress. You got to just keep refiring it a lot, and it gets pretty tedious. So I wanted a good way to make coffee when I have like a dinner group over or something like that, where I have like, you know, 4 to 5 to 6 people where I need to make coffee. So I got the biggest Chemex. It's like a 10 cup, you know, whatever the cups mean. And that's a whole separate topic. That's more of a Syracusian topic, like the variation in what a cup means on right. coffee make. He doesn't drink coffee, but
no, he describes it as he didn't use the word poison exactly, but that's yeah, stimulant. So yes.
I would love to see him like fully caffeined out.
I don't know if anybody's ready for that.
Anyway, so
but it would be funny.
Yeah, so like, so I bought this Chemex for like, you know, group coffee making, and I tried it, and I gotta say I've had other pour over makers before. I've had the little filter cone, the ceramic one, stick on top of the cup and everything, and I've tried like a little swirling the coffee around method when you pour it in and everything. And it's good. That's what I used before the AeroPress a lot, but I just didn't really, it didn't seem worth the effort. For whatever reason, the Chemex is really good. And it's better, the results from the Chemex with their big square filters, it's better than any other pour-over method I've ever had. I still like the AeroPress best, but the Chemex is probably my second place now. And I don't know what it is about it. I don't know if the filters are particularly special. whatever it is, the Chemex is great. And so if you're into coffee, which I guess you'd have to be if you're still listening to this show, I suggest giving the Chemex a shot if you need to make more than one cup. For one cup, they make like a really tiny one. I've never used that one. I don't know if the filters are anywhere near the same or anything like that. But if you're making coffee for two or more people, I would definitely recommend trying the Chemex. And you can put a link in the show notes, Dan, with an Amazon gift code.
I already did.
Not a deal code or whatever you don't like. The promo.
I like promo. I don't like, what's the other one?
Discount code or is it? No, something else.
I blocked it out.
Yep. The power of the mind.
The power of the mind. Power of the human brain.
So we also got a question recently from Mike Pond, who said, Marco has always said that Starbucks coffee is bad, but he's never said specifically what about it makes it so bad. Is it the way they roast their beans or their brewing method, or do they heat it too much after brewing, which makes it bitter, or all of the above? I'd love to hear Marco's thoughts. If Marco were named the new Starbucks CEO, what changes would he make to give them better coffee? So this is a multi-part question. So first, I will address what it is about Starbucks coffee that makes it bad. Now, I don't know a lot about their distribution or, you know, how they get the beans to the stores or how long they sit or anything, but from what I can tell from tasting, and I actually have had Starbucks coffee a lot in my life, like total. I don't have it much anymore, but around like the middle of my Tumblr era, we were at Starbucks every day before I discovered that there was better coffee a few blocks away. You know, because I haven't been this much of a coffee nerd forever. You know, I've grown into it and become more nerdy as time has gone on. So I've had a lot of Starbucks coffee, and what I can tell for the most part is that Starbucks coffee is roasted very, very darkly. And I like dark roast coffee. I don't like burnt coffee. What they do is, it makes sense for what they're trying to be. So you got to figure, most people who go to Starbucks, I don't know this, but I have to imagine almost none of their customers drink the coffee black. Do you think that's probably a safe assumption?
I think that's a very safe one, yeah.
So when you don't drink coffee black, when you put milk, sugar, or both, or Splenda, or God knows what else into your coffee.
Non-dairy creamer.
Right, yeah, plastic, whatever. When you put these things into your coffee, they all have such strong flavors. Like cream kind of mutes all the flavors. You know, the same way cream kind of gets rid of spiciness, like it kind of like coats your tongue, kind of mutes the flavors that are there. And sugar overpowers the flavors that are there by just making everything really sweet. And Splenda is even worse. I don't know how people eat things that contain aspartame, like, or sucralose rather. That's Splenda. Anything that contains sucralose, like yogurt or anything weird like that, I can always taste it after the very first bite. I can be like, oh my God, this contains sucralose. Like it has a weird aftertaste that I really don't like. Anyway, so most of the flavor is going to be masked by the customers, I think. So what they need a coffee that has a strong flavor. That doesn't necessarily mean it has to be a strong, good flavor. And so what I've found with Starbucks coffee is that it tends to taste like burnt ash, basically. Like they roast the beans so far that they can get a strong flavor out of them. And the advantage to them also with their distribution is that when you roast the beans super dark like that, the flavor sticks around for longer on the shelf. Normally, like a properly roasted bean to like a medium to dark level of roast, it'll have a lot of flavor for the first few weeks after roasting, and then that's about it. Then it kind of goes stale and just kind of flattens out, and it starts to lose details and strength of its flavors. One of the reasons why a lot of people like Trader Joe's coffee, and Trader Joe's, you know, they're like this discount grocery chain. They sell like extremely dark roasted coffee in these tubs that sit around from a warehouse probably for months. Because Trader Joe's stuff is you know, their shelf goods are not known for being especially fresh. They're very shelf stable. So anyway, the reason why old coffee is tolerable when it's super dark roasted is because that flavor doesn't really go stale. Like the kind of burnt ash flavor can stick around for a very long time on the shelf. Whereas all the other details of the coffee flavor really don't. Is burnt ash redundant?
Oh, well. Anyway. I don't think so.
I guess you can't really have like fresh ash. I guess that's also a type of tree. That's confusing anyway. Who knows? So when you have like a global distribution network like Starbucks, where you have like centralized roasting facilities that roast in very large quantity, and then you have to ship the roasted beans to the stores that might sit on them for, you know, a certain amount of time, it helps if your goal is to get flavor that is detectable above large amounts of milk and sugar. The best way to do it is exactly what they're doing, which is roast it really dark so they burn the crap out of it, and and the beans can sit around before being brewed. Like from roasting to brewing, they can sit around for 2 months and you won't really tell a difference at that level. So the reason I don't like Starbucks coffee is because I drink it black. And so when I drink their coffee, I can taste all of that burnt flavor, and it's not very good. A few people like that relative to most black coffee drinkers, but I think most don't. So that's mainly why their extremely dark roast is too dark for me, and that's the biggest problem. There are other problems too. Like, you know, I disagree with some of their ratios of coffee to water, and the people are usually annoying and poorly trained in the ones in New York. But you know, those are all smaller issues.
See, I only drink black coffee. I don't ever put anything in it. I think Starbucks is fine.
I bet you love the Kindle Fire.
I haven't used it yet.
So the second part of the question is, if I was named the new Starbucks CEO, what changes would I make to give them better coffee? And I don't think I would change anything, because again, like what they're doing, I think they're doing the right thing for them, which is they need to have a lot of flavor to overcome all the crap people put in it. And keep in mind, a lot of the things people get from Starbucks aren't just cups of drip coffee. They're all the espresso-based drinks, all the milkshakes.
What about their espresso-based drinks? What do you think of that stuff?
I don't really know, because I'm not a big espresso person. I really can't judge espresso very well. So I really don't know. I can't say. I would assume they're using similarly roasted beans, but I don't know that for sure. So anyway, I wouldn't change anything about what they do to solve my problem, because most of their customers don't have my demands and my priorities. You know, most what they're doing, like, it'd be different if they had a roaster in every store and they could have like a snob blend that would be for snobs like me. And then they could have like a,
well, wait, your improvement as CEO right there. Come up with a blend that is just for people like you. That's maybe roasted on the premises or around the corner or something. It's, you know, 10 times as much, which you wouldn't care about because you'd be getting what you want. And people could come in and they'd say, yeah, I want the, you know, snob blend. And they're like, great. And maybe enough people would try it that it'd become, you know, become a new profit center.
It's possible, but I really doubt it. Like, I really doubt they would have the density of customers who like that required to support having roasters in all the stores and doing it that way. What they're doing now is fine, but it's like asking somebody who loves a fine steak what they would do to change Burger King. You know, it's not really applicable. It doesn't really, like, the problems that Burger King has to solve are very different from the problems that a local gourmet steakhouse has to solve. And so Starbucks isn't as bad as Burger King relative to the world of coffee. I mean, Starbucks is a heck of a lot better than like Dunkin' Donuts and 7-Eleven and all the gas station chains. It's a heck of a lot better than all those. You know, and it's much, like, if I'm on a road trip somewhere, I told you this, like, I was on the Pennsylvania Turnpike a lot last week. If I'm on a road trip somewhere and I'm out of the coffee I brought with me from my house, I will stop at either a Starbucks or a Lavazza or whatever's in one of those travel plazas, and I'll get something from there. Usually because, like, you know, I want to stay awake while driving, you know. I know it's not going to be great, but I know it's going to be a heck of a lot better than anything else I can find around there, like on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. So, you know, there are a lot of places in the world, and especially in the U.S., where I don't know anything about the world. So there are a lot of places where Starbucks is the best thing around. Just like there's a lot of places where McDonald's is the most reliably safe food you can eat, which is really sad. But, you know, that's if you can get better, then you should, which isn't really the question. But anyway.
Maybe you meant long, like Longhorn Steakhouse instead of Burger King, because Burger King doesn't even have steaks.
Does Starbucks have coffee?
Absolutely.
If nobody orders it, does anybody hear it? So, we have some follow-up on app marketing. You want to do a sponsor first?
Yes, although we have received a complaint from one listener who said that they felt that there was too much time spent on the sponsors. So out of last week's show, which was over an hour, we spent approximately 3 minutes of that hour and 6 minutes on sponsors. So I apologize for the extra minute there. We'll try and make it really short this time. But we can't, because it's a really good sponsor. It's Smile Software. This week's sponsor is PDF Pen. It's your favorite, Marco.
I love PDF Pen.
The developers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, and a number of other things. It's Smile Software, our friends. Now, PDF Pen, it's an awesome application. And basically, what's it for? Simple way to think of it is, it's an application that lets you edit your PDFs. You can do things, basic things, like you can add signatures so that you get a contract and they're like, oh, we need to sign. You're going to get it back to you. No problem. They send you the PDF, you add your signature to it. Now, people will say, oh, well, you can do that with Preview. Not like this, you can't. It's really amazing the way it works, the seamlessness of it. Instead of resorting to like printing and faxing, but here's what's really cool. You can make corrections on the PDFs. You can edit images. There's OCR for scan documents, which a lot of people will use those scanners. Like you've written a blog post about this.
That's the biggest reason I use PDF Pen is the OCR.
Right. It does the best. I think the best OCR in the business. It'll scan it in, and this helps you go paperless.
I can verify that.
It's your paperless now. So if you want, you can go for the pro version, and then you'll be able to create cross-platform PDF forms yourself. You can build a table of contents for your PDF. It's amazing. So we get a special thing worked out. You go to smilesoftware.com/build, just like the name of the show, build. You can download a fully functional demo. Let me see how it works for you. Now, normally, it's $59.95 or $99.95 for the pro, which I would get the pro, personally. But Build and Analyze listeners can get 20% off. Again, how do you do it? You go to smilesoftware.com/build. Or if you can't remember that, maybe you'll remember build11, because that is the coupon code that you can also use to get 20% off. Build11. Thanks to Smile Software, and sorry to the guy who said that the 3 minutes out of 106 was too much. Next topic. Do I get to read these emails?
Yes.
You want me to read? Is that what you want to do next?
Last year, yeah, last episode, I asked, because somebody had written in asking what my suggestions for app marketing were, you know, how you can market your app, what's actually cost effective, what works, what doesn't. And I didn't really have a good answer because I really don't know. So I asked everybody, all of you wonderful people in the audience, I asked you if you had any idea, if you're a developer and you've tried certain things for marketing and whether they've worked or not. I was curious to know. So we got a number of good responses, and I've asked Dan to read them in his commercial voice because he's so much better at that than I am.
Well, you're too kind, but I don't know which voice you want me to use.
Just read them naturally and it'll come out.
Oh, okay. Now, by the way, when people may wonder how they can submit things to this, how is it that they can have their comment or whatever it is read on the show?
The show notes or the episode links?
They go to 5by5.tv/contact. They pick Build and Analyze, and then we may read them or not. But we probably will. But that's
how we will at least make a humorous guess at how to pronounce your name.
Now, this there's a little checkbox that says, yes, you can read the comment on the air, and yes, you can mention my name. And this person has checked both. We would never do this if we were not given permission, so we ask for that. This is by Steven, got the first part. Bogman.
I'm going with Bauman.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right. I'm so bad at names. Hi, Marco. I have an iPad scrapbooking app called ScrapPad.
Actually, there it says ScatPad. I don't know if that was a typo.
Hi, Marco. I have an iPad scrapbooking app called ScatPad. We struggled at first with how to advertise it. We tried a few things, web ads, contact blogs, etc. But the only thing that got us any traction was releasing free versions of our apps that encouraged people to buy the paid app. We released a new free version themed around most major holidays. This allows us to catch the wave of buzz around the holiday, and Apple tends to feature these apps a lot in their weekly promotions. You know, we get around a 4% conversion rate from the free apps. I felt a bit sleazy about this at first because it felt close to spamming the App Store, but eventually I came to understand that it was the best way to give customers a chance to try the app before buying it. It also proved to us that the way most people find our app is through the App Store, and in particular, the different promotions and lists that Apple features. I hope that helps. Thanks, Marco. Love the podcast and Instapaper. Stephen Bowman.
That was wonderful. So anyway, this is an avenue that I really never tried this. Like, you know, I had my free app for a while, but that's a very different thing. What he's saying is basically that they had a lot of different apps. He said multiple apps, but yeah, they have a lot of different apps, and they'll have, like, you know, the holiday theme versions. Oh, you know, it's Thanksgiving ScatPad. I've never tried that before, having like Thanksgiving Instapaper free. I have no idea. This is a great... I'm really glad that we asked for feedback, because I would never have come up with this as an answer, because I just never even thought of it. But I see developers doing this here and there. I just never really processed it. Thank you, Steve. And that's a good suggestion.
It's a very good suggestion. And will you feel sleazy?
I don't necessarily know if it applies much to my product, because... I don't know. It seems like the kind of thing that... I don't know. I don't think it would work for Instapaper.
Yeah.
But that's just like an irrational feeling I have. I don't really have anything to back that up. So anyway, that's one good answer. Thank you very much. And Dan, would you be so kind as to read the next one?
The next one. Also, we have their permission. Benjamin Mayo. Let's see here. Okay. Marco suggested the difference in selling apps and games, period. I would like to add to this in regard to marketing. Marketing games is harder, much harder. Advertising for any type of app rarely results in a positive ROI, return on investment, and this spells doom for hobbyist low-budget games. Thus, customers don't find your games as they do not find it in the App Store searches, as the keywords for games are so poor and generalized, nor heard it elsewhere. My advice for advertising an app on low budget would be to find an app that you love making that has an obvious name that represents what the app does. This is what I did with Bingo Machine, and have been pleasantly surprised with the results day to day. In short, in my opinion, abstract brand creation on the App Store is hard. Stick to something that clearly describes what the app does, so people find it as they look for a solution to that problem. Love the show, Benjamin Mayo. So what is he trying to say here? He's saying that don't make games. That's what he's saying.
Well, what he's saying, it kind of echoes what I said last week, which is I thought games were a bigger risk than apps, and he's basically saying he's right, or that I'm right about that. But he's also saying that you should use like a simple name like Bingo Machine, you know, rather than like some random
something that's like a euphemism for bingo or something,
or like a clever name that doesn't contain it. Which, again, I can't really be of much use here because my app is called Instapaper and has nothing to do with either of those word portions. But and the story of that I think I already told. But yeah. Anyway, I think also, in case you listen, the chat room pointed out, he has an app called Fast Text. And he said it didn't really work for that. So there's two different sides of this. One is if you use an obvious phrase as your name, and I think this could have caused a problem for Fast Text, there's just so much competition for those words that I think it would help a lot if you were kind of already in the top lists and people were buying it. Like if they're browsing through a top list, then having an obvious name like that might be more helpful than having a random phrase. But, I think another good example of this is back then when, I don't know, when was this, like 2 years ago? When was Ramp Champ released?
Oh, yeah, that's an interesting story.
It was about 2 years
about
ago.
About two. That sounds right.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So the Icon Factory released a game called Ramp Champ, and it was similar to Skee-Ball in many ways. Skee-Ball is a trademark that they couldn't use. A different game, well, they didn't use it. I don't know if they couldn't or what, but they didn't use it. A different game came on the store called Skee-Ball, and it was officially licensed to use that trademark. And Skee-Ball sold extremely well. I think it was in the top 10 of all paid apps for a long time. It was way up there in the charts. Sold extremely well, even though it wasn't that great of a game, supposedly. I never tried it, but I heard it wasn't that great of a game.
Just had the right name.
Yeah, it was called Skee-Ball. The icon was the famous Skee-Ball back panel thing with the little circles and the scores, like instantly recognizable as, oh, that's a Skee-Ball game. I know what that is. And Ramp Champ had a similar game mechanic to Skee-Ball, but they couldn't use that name. And so the name didn't really mean much to people browsing the App Store casually. And the icon was kind of didn't really look like it either. And Ramp Champ was by far a better game by a long shot. But because who knows, there could have been other factors as well, but not having a recognizable name really hurt them. And Skee-Ball sold extremely well, so showing that there is obvious demand for this, but then Ramp Champ didn't sell very well, despite being a much better version. So there's definitely, you can go either way on this. There's a good question from Tenfef in the chat room. What about naming your app like Instapaper-Save Articles to Read Later? That's a good idea for, at first, when you first think about it. The problem is, what I found is that almost all App Store buyers are browsing it on the device. They're browsing it from the App Store app on the iPhone and iPad. And when, browsing the list of app titles, if the title is too long to fit, it just gets truncated and they stick an ellipsis on the end. And so not much text fits there. Yeah. Instapaper fits, but not with that much room to spare. So anything you put that won't fit on that very first line is going to be not seen by most casual browsers. And so therefore, you're probably wasting your time. I also kind of always felt it was a little bit dirty to like have like name-hot keywords. But I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
So here's
and I should point out, my biggest competitor is called Read It Later. It's a much more obvious name than Instapaper. But I don't know why they don't beat me more. for having that name, you would think. So I guess that's a good example of maybe that this isn't everything. So I don't know.
This may be a really stupid question, and I already know the answer, but I want to ask it just to sort of go on record.
Yeah.
Is it possible to release the same app with a different name, two different names? So you could have Instapaper, and then you could release Instapaper again with a different name called, Read Cool Things on the Web, whatever, later.
You could probably have multiple copies of the same app. I mean, if you look at the
same app, different name.
Yeah, like there's a lot of apps that are all like very minor variations on each other. Like a lot of like pre-made ebook apps that it's like 500 copies of the exact same app with a different ebook preloaded into it. Or like hot news for mattress sales. And it'll be like the same app as hot news for rocket ships. But you know, with a different search query RSS feed as its news browsing source. I mean, like, there's lots of, well, I consider it really spam. Lots of spam apps like that.
Some people in the chat room, Marco, are saying that that it is possible to do that exact same app with two different names. Seems weird, though.
I mean, one thing though, in my case, I get a lot more sales when I rank well in a category. So most of the time, I rank very well in the news category. I get more sales from that, I think, from what I can tell. I mean, it's kind of hard to tell because there's no analytics, but I think a lot of my sales come from people browsing the news category and selecting my app from there. Anything you do that splits up your app into multiple apps, including having a free and a paid, or like, you know, a regular and a plus, anything like that, and including any of these like copying your app to multiple titles, anything you do that will split up your app's ranking effectively is probably not worth doing. Because if you can get into any of the category lists, into like the top 50, you'll see a boost in sales. And it's actually very interesting to look at the category list and see kind of where you can fit. News is fairly weird in the sense that it's pretty far down the list in the store, so it doesn't get that much traffic. There's not that much competition for it, but there's also a lot of stuff there that doesn't really belong there. And it's even kind of questionable whether Instapaper, like what category should Instapaper be in? And I really have no idea. I went to where the RSS readers were. I figured that was fair. And all of my competitors followed me there. So I guess that makes sense. I really, you know, the App Store, like most of your sales will come from people browsing the App Store for most apps. You know, you can try to drive sales from the web, but it's really not nearly as effective as App Store browsing because there are a lot of people browsing the App Store all the time. There's a really good blog post that just came out. Let me send you the link here. It's by Rusty Moyer. I think it's Moyer. Here, I sent you the link on the chat.
I see that. Okay.
He responded to our marketing question with a blog post. With what works. We'll put this link in the show notes.
Show notes, by the way, are sponsored by HelpSpot.com, the lovely young Ian Landsman and his help desk software.
AKA the episode links. And he basically says, you know, he tried like emailing bloggers, and he made a video and he emailed friends. And he basically said that the most valuable promotion by far was when Apple featured it in New and Noteworthy. And the app's called Boxcat.
Boxcat. Nothing to do with Ceiling Cat.
I don't know. Yeah, so anyway, I'll give him an app plug there.
Smash into cars. Create traffic mayhem. I haven't seen this before. So have you played this?
I haven't. It looks kind of cool, actually.
Looks very cool. It's
8-bit style graphics.
Yeah, I like that. A retro arcade smasher.
Yeah, anyways, yeah, he said, like, you know, again, it's like Apple featuring you is the best thing. It's better than any kind of promotion you can buy. And in my limited experience, I've found that to be the case as well. I did see, we had a few people who said that they bought my app because of the ad on the talk show here. I mentioned last week that I bought a few talk show episodes sponsorship before I had my podcast here. And I said, I mentioned how it's very difficult to tell how effective it is because, you know, Apple gives you no analytics. So like, if I advertise on a podcast and I could see that a lot more people were searching the App Store for the word Instapaper, then I could tell, oh, that was really effective, probably.
Right.
But Apple gives you no indication of where your sales are coming from. And I've been fortunate enough that Apple has featured me a few times in like New and Noteworthy and like the staff picks and things like that. There's almost no downside to that at all, except that it makes it difficult for me to tell whether my other promotional effects have, or my other promotional efforts are effective or not, because my sales vary a lot anyway. And sometimes it's because I've been featured in like an international store somewhere that I don't notice. And so I notice there's a sales bump, but I don't really know why. You know, and oftentimes what you'll also find a little oddity, if in my case, if many of your sales come from people browsing the App Store and seeing some category top list, my sales correlate directly almost to how well Apple's device sales are. I get the feeling most people, and this is all, again, since I have no analytics, this is mostly theories. I get the feeling that a lot of people, when they buy a new phone, they go and browse through apps, and they're kind of already in like a spending mood, so they're less price sensitive. Mm. So they go and buy like a bunch of apps when they first get their phone home, or their iPad, or their iPod Touch. And so I find my best sales days are usually days that Apple has released a new product, and mostly the iPad is what gets me, because when they release a new iPhone, I do see a bump, but it's a much smaller bump than the iPad bump. And part of that's because I'm about 60% iPad business. But I think also part of that is because when they release a new iPhone, a lot of people still don't have their contracts ready to upgrade yet. They don't get them a lot on day one, whereas iPads, I feel like more people get them when they come out proportionally to all iPad owners. And also like Christmas is very big for me because a lot of people give iPads as gifts. And iPod Touches as well. Trying to market your app. This is a very long way of saying trying to market your app is very difficult. And Apple's promotion by far is the most valuable, but you can't really do anything about that except what Rusty Moyer points out here is very relevant. He said, being featured has improved sales more than all of my other marketing combined, but most apps won't be featured. Apple only promotes apps that make iOS look good. So I believe the most important marketing step is to try to make a great app. That's very important. Not only making a great app, but also what I said before, making an app that makes iOS look good. That's very important. And one of the things you can do is just kind of follow Apple's trends. If Apple just released a new API, let's say they release a new motion sensing thing, new motion sensing API, then if you're one of the very first apps in the store that makes good use of that, you're almost definitely going to be featured, unless your app is a piece of garbage. But then you have other problems. If you make a good app that showcases a new technology that Apple wants to push and show off, then you have a much better chance of being featured. Also, now as Rapowell points out in the chat room, iCloud is the new thing. If you support iCloud very well and do something cool with iCloud, that'll probably help you these days. You got to figure from Apple's point of view, the reason they're spotlighting apps is to keep their store looking good, to keep their devices looking good, to encourage people to buy more apps. And, if you kind of follow the Apple aesthetic, which is usually very, look at Find My Friends. It's very graphically rich. It has texture everywhere, lots of graphical design built in. If you do the things that Apple likes and you make Apple look good by using their stuff really well, you will dramatically increase your chances of being featured. So, anyway. Oh, I think I'm done with app marketing for a while, huh?
Turned out to be, I think, maybe a bigger topic than you had originally planned for.
Well, it is. And I'm really, thank you for the people who sent in stuff and told us stuff, because that really does help a lot, because, I only have experience marketing my one app. And so I can tell you about things problems I've run into, but marketing applies so differently to different apps that it's good to hear from a lot of other people. So, I have a new topic next. Do we have to do another sponsor, or are we good for this?
We have been speaking for about 45 minutes. Probably be a good time to talk about Squarespace.
Let's do it.
Squarespace.com. I mean, at this point, that's all I have to do is say it, and people start getting excited. It's at Squarespace.com. Why? Because they are a fully hosted, completely managed environment for rapidly creating a beautiful website. A matter of minutes. They have an interface that's like nothing else on the web. They update this thing daily. You don't have to host anything. It doesn't matter what you want to do. You want to make a website? Great. Blogging? Fine. Photographs? Whatever you want. It doesn't matter. They can handle it. They scale all by themselves. You don't have to worry. Did John Gruber link me? Am I on this site? Am I on that? It doesn't matter. Never have to worry about that. And they don't charge you more if you get a lot of traffic either. It's worth mentioning. They give you full control over your content and site customization. So if you want to get in there and design and tweak things and do your own custom CSS and all that, so you can do all that. Or if you just want to pick one of their amazing templates, you can do that too and never touch any code at all. Focus on your core. You know, if you're an iOS developer, do you really want to be doing HTML and CSS? Maybe not. Maybe you do. Doesn't matter. Squarespace lets you do both. So here's what you do. You go to squarespace.com/5x5. 14 days for free. We'll do that for you. But we'll do some more. 20% off for 6 months. Don't email me 12. That is the code. Don't email me 12. 20% off 6 months. That's it. Squarespace.com.
I do want to quickly follow up. Marlene underscore in the chat room said, relative to, you know, talking about the marketing.
Right.
Look at the tiny amount of featured apps compared to the amount of apps in the store. It's terrible. This is worth revisiting because if you look at some of the featured apps, Apple has a lot of featured sections. They have entire staff members devoted just to doing this. Probably even more than I would guess, because they have all these different stores in different countries and everything. They need apps to feature. It does good by them if they have as much to feature as possible. And if you look at the App Store, by the numbers, most apps are terrible. So it's not really. I think there are certainly a lot of apps, but. And there's a lot that don't get featured, but if you make a very good app, it is very likely that you'll get featured at least once because they need apps to feature. It's similar to, and by the way, and I think the numbers versus like slots they have to fill every single week versus good brand new apps they've never seen before, I think the apps have the favorable side of that. It's also worth looking at or thinking about like bloggers, you know.
Right.
You know, John Gruber links to things that are good. And he links to what, like 10 things a day?
I've never counted. Does he have like a number that he does?
I don't know. Probably not officially, but, you know, the kind of, you know, most blogs that link to things on a regular basis do multiple posts a day. There's a lot of blogs out there that are all looking for good things to link to, good, new, fresh things. And if you can be one of those things, like, they need you more than you need them. Like, the blogs and the press, they need good things to link to. So if your app is good, that's really all you need to do. You know, you should tell somebody about it and see if you can spread the word a little bit. But for the most part, your app just needs to be good. And Apple needs good apps to feature. Bloggers need good apps to write about. Journalists need people's statements to turn against them to make fancy headlines. They need content to work with. You are the content for them. So, I really think that if you make a really great app, it will be seen. And the fact is, like, a lot of people make a really great app that's useful to almost nobody. So that, you know, or they think they made a great app and it actually isn't that great. And that's a tough situation. You know, nobody wants to tell you that the thing that you think is awesome really isn't, or that you've made a really great app that solves a problem nobody has. But I really think if you make an app that really is good, that solves a real problem, or that is fun in some way,
right?
I think people find it. So anyway, another question, and I've been heavy on the questions this last 2 weeks because not much has happened in the news. I don't really want to talk about Carrier IQ that much, except for this question, just because it seems like we don't really know much of the story yet.
Yeah.
And the more we learn, it seems like the less sensational it really is. But anyway, got a good question from, I'm going to say Patrick Cheng. It's Cheung. I'm going to say Cheng. Maybe Chung. I don't know. Would like to know, Marco's... That's the beginning of the sentence.
I'm going to go with Chung, man. You got to do Chung.
Okay. Would like to know Marco's take on including mobile analytics SDK in iOS apps.
That is the whole thing. But wait a minute. He said don't reveal his identity.
He did?
Yeah.
Oh.
Sorry, Pat. Right. We're not. It's not like we're going to read off his email.
No.
I mean, there's going to be a lot of Patrick Chung's.
It's probably a common name.
I think it is.
Anyway, we should say his name more to make it even.
We should title the episode Patrick Chung. We would like to know Marco's take on including mobile analytics SDK in iOS apps.
Okay. I've never used a third-party analytics product, and I get asked whenever I make my big posts about, you know, with my little pie graphs about Instapaper's device stats among its user base, people always ask, how am I getting these stats? What analytics package am I using? I'm not using one. And the way I get these stats is pretty simple. The Instapaper app communicates to the server to do pretty much everything. To save new articles, to update the list of articles, to get the text view, every action, every article download is done on the server side and just sent to the app. And so on those requests, for lots of good reasons, like versioning the API and bug fixing and everything else, I include the version of the app they're using, the OS version they're using, which is a little system call. You can look it up. I think a long time ago, Erica Sadin posted a thing about it. Anyway, iOS version, app version, and device type. Another system, it'll tell you, like, all those little rumored things you see, like iPhone 4.1. Actually, I don't need to say the iPhone. Oh, no, that's the 4S, right? Yeah, anyway. So I have, I report back those device stats. Device type, version, and app version. And that allows me, and then I record on the person's user records, they used a device of this version to access Instapaper last. So that way I can tell things like, you know, when can I drop support for iOS 3? So I added these stats in an earlier version of the app to kind of help me figure this out.
Right.
I think I added them in 3.0. And then, you know, a few months later, when I was planning for 4.0, I was able to make the decision, look, it looks like almost nobody out of people who were using the most recent version of the app actively, almost none of them were using iOS 3 anymore. And even fewer of them were using devices that can't run iOS 3. So that's how I made that decision. This is a tricky area, though, and Carrier IQ is kind of bringing this to the spotlight this week. First of all, there are limitations on what Apple allows you to do. So some of the things that you can't do, at least if Apple can figure it out, are like you can't, for instance, read all the email addresses out of somebody's contact address book on the iPhone and send them all to a server somewhere to be marketed to.
Right.
That would be bad.
That would be bad for the user.
Yeah, and all the people they know. So that's something you can't do. And I don't know to what extent Apple tries to detect things like this. I know they do try, and I know they catch a lot. They basically, Apple has a rule, kind of generally, your app can't be creepy. And it's really kind of subjective as to what that means. And I think it's kind of a case-by-case basis where, like, you know, Apple's reviewers try to figure out, like, is this going over a line or not? And you have to kind of realize, like, what do people expect? Like, what is reasonable? And what do they expect out of privacy? So one thing is, like, a while ago, Google launched a page where it would show you a huge history of everything you ever searched for. And, like, all these, and it was really kind of creepy when once you looked and you realized, oh, my God, I give Google a lot of information about myself. And people were really freaked out that they record all of this. So, like, if your app has access to information about somebody, you should also, you know, before you decide whether to use that or whether to store it or whether to keep it, first you should have a privacy policy that's fairly accurate. But you should also, you should try to figure out, try to think like a customer and maybe just ask your customers if you can't think like them, which would be unfortunate. What's reasonable here? Like, tell them, like, hey, by the way, I have access to your email address here and all your friends' email addresses, just so you know, I'm not using them. You know, No, oh, that's probably creepy too. But anyway, I guess like the whole thing is like, don't be creepy as much as possible. Like, people shouldn't, you shouldn't surprise people in a negative way if they realize the information that you have on them. So, you know, there's lots of different analytics things people can do. People ask me a lot, like, oh, do you know how often people use feature X, or, you know, when they read my articles and when they stop reading my articles and how far they get and whether they stare at one spot for a while. And I collect very few metrics, very, very few. Part of it is just because I'm not like an analytics guy. This is kind of a cultural thing. Like, a lot of people just love analytics and can't get enough of them and base a lot of their decisions on them. I don't. I don't have that interest. So I don't collect a lot of analytics at all. But, you know, you could theoretically, and a lot of people do, use packages that like measure how many times a button is clicked. And I think this is kind of what Carrier IQ was supposed to be doing, mm-hmm. and possibly what it is doing, that we're blowing out of proportion. Who knows?
It was supposed to be a useful tool to get some information that's not not secret, not private. Just how are people using this stuff?
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, you know, if this one feature is very rarely used, then you might consider removing it. Or if people get to like stage 3 on this wizard screen and they hit cancel every single time, maybe something's wrong with that screen and you should make it easier or better or something. So like, analytics can be useful for things like that. But I don't know anything about that. I've never done that. And again, you always have to be wary, you know, is what I'm doing creepy? And if you're a programmer, maybe you don't necessarily have the... Oh, God, I shouldn't say that. Maybe you might not be the best judge of that. Maybe you should ask someone else if you're not sure. Oh, God. So... different topic entirely.
Yes.
Questions... from Tim Keller on Second Crack, my blogging engine.
Which, by the way, is available for download for Mac OS X Lion in the App Store.
Really?
Oh, wait, it's not?
No. There's no app. Really, there's no app. It's just like a folder of Dropbox files. There's been a few other... I think it's called Calipin? I don't know. There's been a few other Dropbox... based static file blogging engines recently.
Right.
And I don't know anything about them. I haven't really tried any of them. I don't really have time at the moment to try any of them, but they seem pretty similar, at least from what I've seen and heard. But Second Crack is my blogging engine that I haven't released, that I said I was going to release. And I probably will someday release it, but I'm still nowhere close to that. It's still full of bugs and I don't want to release it yet. Questions from Tim Keller were, how are you finding a static blogging engine? I love it. Absolutely love it. I recommend, if you're the kind of geek that even knows what that means, it's worth checking out a static blogging engine. I host my entire site on the smallest VPS that Linode sells, and it's fine. It's never gone down. It's never had a problem with CPU usage or traffic inbound, even when John Gruber links, it's fine. Are you writing more, less, or the same?
More.
More.
I'd say more. Do you think that it's because of the app that you're writing more?
Well, do you enjoy writing any more or less? More. Have there been any damn if I only was on WordPress/Tumblr/etc. moments? Yes. Plenty of them. One of the biggest things that the big hosted blogging systems will give you that your own little self-rolled things don't is apps and APIs. Instapaper can post to Tumblr and can, you know, email things into people's email gateways and things like that. I don't currently have a good way to post directly to Second Crack from an app. Even making some kind of way for phones to post to it is kind of clunky. And so there's lots of cases like that where I would love to have something that's, you know, a little more feature filled in certain situations, like when I'm on a phone or something, but it doesn't happen that often. So right now I'm okay without that. And finally, do you still intend to make the source available? Yes.
Good.
Good week?
Big week.
Yeah.
61 minutes. You did good, man. Look at this.
I plowed through the entire question inbox glut that I had.
Nice.
Yeah, so if you have any other questions, I guess you could ask them. Not you, Dan. Well, you could ask them too, I guess. I guess I'd allow that.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, there wasn't that much other news that happened this week in the world of development, was there? I could talk about my e-readers, but I talked enough about those.
Yeah, you did a big review.
Big review.
You did a big review.
It was big. It took me forever. That might be the longest review I've ever written.
Well, you did special little pictures, and we're talking about, I'll put this in the show notes, brought to you by HelpSpot.com. Kindle Touch compared to Nook, Simple Touch, Kobo Touch, and Kindle 4. Can I just read
the whole thing?
No. Can I just read the last paragraph, save them the trouble, or do you want them to go read it?
Yeah, you can read it. I don't care if people read it.
The low-end non-touch Kindle 4 is actually my favorite e-reader today. It lacks the easier text selection and periodical navigation of the touch readers, and it's effectively impossible to type on, but neither of those interfere with the most common actions when reading. It's faster, thinner, and lighter than all of the touch readers. The interface makes the most sense, and it's the most responsive, and it works best with Instapaper.
Plug.
That's it. That's the nutshell, is that you picked the old school Kindle, what you are consenting to call the Kindle 4.
Yep.
Just the basic, closest device to what's currently, well, not currently, what was out there for all those years. Just some updates.
Yeah, the Kindle 4 is extremely similar to the Kindle 3 with the keyboard cut off. That's basically it. Like, as far as I can tell, the software is identical. The interface is the same. Like, there's almost the same. It looks extremely similar. It works extremely similar. The screen, as far as I can tell, is the exact same screen with the exact same response rate. It's very similar to the Kindle 3. So if you have a Kindle 3, which is still available, and they've renamed it to the Kindle keyboard, which sounds like a peripheral to a Kindle, but If you have a Kindle 3, it probably isn't worth upgrading unless you want the smaller size, which it is a lot smaller and thinner and lighter, which is nice. But yeah, if you have like a Kindle 2, it's a very big difference. But not much from a Kindle 3. And if you don't have a Kindle at all, this is a great way to start. It's $110 without ads, $80 with ads, and despite my usual ad stance, the ads are actually the way to go when you buy it, I think, because you can change your mind later. You can go to the Manage My Kindle page on Amazon and remove the ads from a device that you previously bought with ads.
I had no idea. That's how I blogged about this. That is like, they don't talk about that. I'd never heard that before.
You just pay the difference. It's like $30 or $40 depending on the model. You just pay the difference of what the non-ad one costs, and then you can remove the ads. And that's pretty cool, actually. And so it basically makes it so that you can buy it with the ads by default and then change your mind later if you find the ads to be intrusive. So that's pretty cool. I will say, though, please, if you're giving it as a gift, please don't include the ads. I think that's a little bit weird. But anyway.
Anyway.
And good question from Rapowell in the chat room.
It's pronounced Rapunzel.
Oh, sorry. How do the page turn buttons in the Kindle 4 feel compared to the 3? Exactly the same. Like, exactly the same. It's kind of weird, actually. They feel exactly the same. And I don't like it because I really didn't like the Kindle 3 buttons at all. I don't like how they wrap around the edge. And if your hand is wrapped around the edge and you push the button, it kind of pinches the back of your hand. It's really not a good design at all. You would think with an e-reader that the most common action people would perform, which is turning to the next page, the hardware should be optimized to that. And for some reason, The Kindle 2 is the only one that I feel actually was optimized for that. The Kindle 3, 4, and Touch all have really terrible page-turning hardware. But anyway, I think we're done.
All right, we are done.
And it's good to be back in my office.
Seriously.
We should move to 4:30 until my house renovation stuff is done.
Really?
Because
do you want to? I'm much better in the afternoon.
I almost recorded the show from the laundry room. Which is bigger than, probably bigger than the closet you were recording in a few months ago. But because the laundry room would have been the least noisy room of the house while they were doing construction work a few feet away.
No, I know how that is. You remember I was recording in a bedroom in closet for quite a while. You do what you got to do. You got to put the show first. The people come first.
The show must go on.
The show must go on. All right. Well, if you want to send us those comments and thoughts and feedback and questions, you can go to 5by5.tv/contact and you will pick, build, and analyze from the list that you will find there. And whatever you type in that little box, we'll make it to Marco and I, and maybe we'll even read your question on the air if you want us to. And you can follow Marco on Twitter. He's Marco Arment. Don't forget the T. I'm Dan Benjamin. Also on Twitter, we appreciate you guys tuning in to this show. It's great to have you here as an audience. And you know, we haven't asked this for a long time, but we'll mention it now. If you haven't rated the show on iTunes, you can do that. And it will help people find the show. That's key. That's only with you guys, our audience, are the only way that we can have more audience. And the
plus,
best,
we got to be hypercritical.
Are we not beating...
No, hypercritical is always ahead of us. We gotta beat John.
All right. So how do you do that? You go to iTunes and or you just go to 5by5.tv/buildanalyze and there'll be a little iTunes link there, or you can just search for it in iTunes and then you can sign in and rate it, review it. Whatever you want to do, go ahead and do it. And we appreciate that. We will be back next week. Have a good week.
You too.